And as Dr. Michael, director of the writing lab, this year, which means that part of my duties are organizing this series, these colloquia. So if you have thoughts about these that you want to email to me, I'd be interested in hearing them, particularly for next semester, when we'll probably be focusing somewhat on Litrad 2 and the annotated essay in particular. At least that's how last semester worked. But we'll still, that's open for some thought. So if there are particular issues that you're having in your own writing, things that you'd be interested in seeing presentations on, feel free to send me an email about that. And this presentation is going to be a little unusual for me. I don't normally use projectors and computers in class or anything like that. So it looks like everything's working though, which is good, and we'll see how this goes. I'm thinking it might be best if I just sit down so I can use the computers. That could be good. I think everybody can still see me. And what I'm going to talk about today, as you might have seen on the little flyers, if you've been looking at the flyers, is the birth, and then I said IE, that is labor of a paper. And the reason I gave it that title is because what I'm going to be talking about is a paper that I wrote in my last class as a PhD student, which is actually just last semester. I'm now what's called a PhD candidate, which means I have a dissertation to write. And so in my last class, as a graduate student, I was working on this paper and I used Google Docs to compose it. And you can see your revision history with Google Docs. So you can go back and you can sort of recreate how the paper comes to be. And so that's kind of what I'm going to show you today. Talk about how much time, what kind of changes I made when, these sorts of things. I'm not saying that this is necessarily the best way to go about this or the only way to go about this. The point to get across is that a lot of work goes into an essay. I won't say good or anything like that either. I'll let others be the judge of that. But the reason I use this title is because I have a son who's about to be 7 months old. This paper was due, apparently, based on the date that is on it, May 18th of last year. My son was born on April 14th. So I was writing this paper with a couple-week-old baby in the house, which is, I think, one of the, you'll see at some points that I'm writing at 3 a.m. or something. He probably woke up in the middle of the night or something. But I think the analogy is good because as my wife gave birth to a son and labored over that, I was giving birth to a paper around the same time. She probably had the harder task. Definitely longer preparation involved for that one. But basically, this is how one paper worked. This isn't necessarily the way I always do things. In fact, I normally print out a lot of copies and read over printed copies. I was talking to students in Litrad 1 just today about printing out and reading printed hard copies of what you've written. That's, I think, a very good thing. It makes it a lot easier to catch typos than on screen. In fact, I told them that I sent them an email of a PDF of an assignment that I had written up for some work they're going to be doing soon on Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, because we're doing things in some strange order. And I accidentally typed Sir Gawain and the Greek Knight. And I didn't notice it in the PDF that I emailed to them. But then as soon as I printed out a copy and was about to make copies of it, I noticed it immediately on the hard copy. I don't know why, but that's how at least my brain works. I can see things better on paper than on a screen. Maybe yours is different, but if your brain is similar at all, you're probably going to be better off reading a printed copy before you turn it in. So normally I print out a lot more than I did for this paper, probably in part because there was a baby in the house and I didn't have the option to run to and from the printer as much or something. One thing that I wanted to think about too is I brought in my notes from the class. And of course this is a little bit different. My experience last semester, we were doing Home of Virgil, which is largely what you're doing this semester as well. I happened to have had more familiarity with Homer and Virgil probably than most of you do right now when I took the class, so I had that advantage going for me. But actually I wrote on the Odyssey, and that was the text that I probably had the least familiarity with. I thought I was going to write about Virgil because knowing that I had a son on the way, I had done more work with Virgil in the past and I thought that was just going to be the easiest thing. But then I came upon this great moment in the Odyssey that I just couldn't pass up, and that's what I'm going to talk about. But before I do so, I was just looking at the notes that I had from this class. And I don't usually even review my notes from classes, but I like taking notes because it keeps me involved in the class, right? And I don't know if this is a small or large number of notes to have from a semester and what you have from your own Litrad class right now. I'm assuming everyone's, most of you are probably in Lit Trad 1. Who's not in Lit Trad 1 right now? Okay, well, good. We'll just assume everybody's thinking about Homer and Virgil still. And so these are my class notes that I had cut out of a regular notebook and just stashed somewhere. And there are 40 sheets of paper here, front and back, with writing on them. So some 80 pages of notes that I took in class, right? And so the point there is thinking, being attentive in class, thinking about things throughout the semester is preparing for the paper, right? So if you have 2 pages of notes right now for the Lit Trad, that's probably too few. If you have 80, that's probably too many in some ways, but maybe not. The point would be, though, that you do need to be thinking about things throughout the semester, right, in class, paying attention to the material, and that helps your papers a lot. And then the next thing that I was going to look at is that once I had realized what I was going to be writing about, I had gone through, I actually reread the poem just looking for these things that I was interested in. And when I did that, I ended up with 8 sheets of paper, front and back, and notes. So 16 pages of handwritten notes about what I was going to be writing. Now this was for what ended up being, let's see, this ended up being in typical MLA, double spaced, all of that, right around 12 pages. So about four to six times as long as anything you'd be writing in Lit Trad 1 anyway. So, you know, maybe 16 pages of notes is more than you would want to have, but, you know, by comparison, maybe 4 pages of notes, 3 to 4 pages of notes, handwritten, would be something that you might be looking for. And then what I did, well, first maybe I should explain what the topic of this paper was. So I was reading along, right, in the Odyssey, and I came upon Argus the dog. And I thought, this is strange. This is a very strange moment. And when you find a very strange moment, that's a good opportunity to think about a paper topic, right? When something's strange, it doesn't make sense to you, it seems odd, that's a good moment to start exploring. And so I saw Argus the dog. This is a strange dog. He's a very long-lived dog. He's been alive for 20 years. He remembers Odysseus better than anybody does. Strange, strange character. So then I saw other references to dogs as I kept reading. And I thought, this is interesting. There are a lot of references to dogs here. What's Homer doing with all these dogs? And so that's when I went back and reread the poem looking for dogs. And what I ended up with was making a spreadsheet. So here's just a nice blank spreadsheet. And then I sit down and, let's see. So I started doing this on April 10th, 4 days before my son's born. Let's see if I can make this. It's not doing what I thought it was going to. Okay, so I start putting in book and line number, quotation, comments, right? So I've written down somewhere all of these different books and line numbers. And so I'm finding all of these references to dogs, and I'm starting to make a note for myself what all these things are. And I just figured that this would be the best way that I could make sense of how all of these things fit together. So it looks like on April 10th, I spent a couple hours sitting down, just typing out and thinking about all of these things. So this gets us up to... So by, yeah, so it looks like a couple hours I spent working on this spreadsheet, and what I ended up with was, I think, an exhaustive list of all the references to dogs in the Odyssey, and with some comments about what I had noticed when I read them. And I had the quotation ready at hand, had the citation. That way, when I sat down with the actual essay, I could just kind of cut and paste and format everything properly. I already had all the quotations there. I didn't have to keep looking back at the book over and over and over again. It was all going to be handy in one spot. What this also allowed me to do, and I guess for the first time on April 11th, you can see here, I start going through here. Let's see, what am I doing on that day? It looks like, you can't quite tell what's happening here. Okay, so I'm probably starting to organize these things into some sort of categories, which is one of the things that I was interested in doing, trying to figure out how I was going to organize my paper. It's kind of hard to see what's happening at this point. Okay, it looks like I'm just adding more comments at this point. And so I spent some time, let's see, we started at around noon or something. And so again, it looks like over the course of maybe an hour or so, I'm still looking over the spreadsheet every so often, typing things in here. Every few minutes I've made a change here. And at this point, it's going to become more useful to probably show less detailed revisions. So by April, by that day, it looks like I was still just typing things in. But then you can see I've spent a few days have passed, basically, you know, 3 days after this, my son's born. It's a while before I can return to the spreadsheet, it looks like. But when I do, I started doing some highlighting of things and other things like this, such that these are now, I guess, in order of books here on the side. And then I know somewhere in here we get some highlighting different things. I reformat the comments a little bit so I can add in more comments and make these become much longer. These are almost turning into paragraphs, as it turns out. And then somewhere in here there's highlighting. Okay, now you can start seeing, I think this is where you can start seeing some color coding. So I'm noticing, well, this quotation is like this quotation. They're both have some sort of commonality, right? Some of the things I was thinking about is these references are just to normal dogs. These references are calling, someone is calling another person a dog, things like this. And so I started breaking these things down, thinking about how I might organize this paper. And then I decided at some point, well, I'm going to be, you know, a fancy graduate student and use some Greek that I don't know, right? But I looked up Perseus Digital Library and I found the Homer's Greek and I figured out which words were these, and then that helped me also realize, you know, how Homer's thinking of these words and categorizing things as well. And so I started noticing, you know, you can, even not knowing Greek, you can tell that these first two things here, right, are the same word, right? So he's using the same word here. That's actually the same word, it's just a different sort of form. But you can tell that this is a very different word. This is actually the word for puppy or something like this, right? This is the one that's talking about Skillet, right, who's like a puppy. And so there are some different words that end up being translated dog. And part of this was that I wanted to make sure that I had all the references to dog and that the translator hadn't missed one or something. And so I compared a couple translations and things like this as well. Again, not necessarily the sorts of things you would need to be doing for LitTrad, but something that I was trying to add into the paper. The point here is that I did a lot of work preparatory to the paper itself, right? So over the course of, what are we at now, a week, and so all the way up until the day of the paper's due, I'm still messing with a spreadsheet because it's become a useful resource for me to keep track of what I'm doing and making sure I'm doing all my references properly. So then let's pull over to the actual paper. And you can see, like I said, this must have been due on the 18th, at least that's the date I put on the paper. And this is only the 14th when I'm starting. So actually starting the writing, it's in some ways a little late for a 12-page paper. So my excuse would be that I just had a son born, right? But in fact, when you're writing, oftentimes you're probably going to be writing just a few days before the paper. Obviously start as soon as you possibly can, definitely not the night before. You want to give yourself a few days, right? And so we can start to see, the first thing I do is, you know, put in the heading and make sure everything looks like it's supposed to look in MLA, so I don't have to worry about that anymore. And then, you know, I can come through here and I start typing things out that I'm thinking about. And once again, it's probably going to make the most sense, at least initially, to look at this little less detailed revisions. So you can see that I spent some time on May 14th, and then I spent some time on May 15th and the 16th. And maybe I should scroll through. So this is now up to 4 pages in a couple days. This is what I added, apparently, that what's in highlighted there on the 16th. I added these things there. Everything else had stayed the same. So sometime before 7 and 11, I must have done that. And then by 8:33, I had gone back and changed some little things in the intro. Even, you know, minor details like dashes and things. Reworded some things here. Added in some transitions, it looks like. Added in a sentence there. Drastically expanded upon this moment, it looks like. What was apparently one sentence suddenly becomes a paragraph. Added some things in here. You can also tell, though, that this is not, you know, you've got this moment here where I've got this one sentence that's standing in for a paragraph, and I would never, actually two sentences, I guess. It's far too short to be a real paragraph, but that doesn't matter right now. I'm just drafting things out. And those seems to be the main additions I made there. And then later that night, I don't know, this must have been actually a solid, just sitting down and working for a number of hours. Whether or not you want to sit down and work for 4 hours straight is another question. It might be more advisable, particularly for a short paper, to spend an hour, go do something else, come back and spend an hour.
Remember, I've got a at this point, you know, month-old son that I'm having to help work, take care of as much as I can as well. So I'm taking advantage of every time I can get to do this. You have more opportunity to be flexible in the work you're doing, and you don't have to tie yourself down to a computer for a long time. But then it looks like by the time 11:42 comes along that night, I've added other things. I've gone to Footnotes, which is another one of the favorite things of graduate students that you don't need to worry about. I think some of these things actually, you know, I'll move back and forth between the paper and Footnotes as well. You can see I've added in a little bit here. I've brought in C.S. Lewis, who's a favorite of mine. When he talks about dogs at one point, I thought that would be an interesting comparison. I mentioned Plato's Republic, something that he also talks about dogs, so I thought I would bring in what he says there and relate it as well. You can see here I've also made some comparisons to the Iliad. Somewhere. There we go. You can see that as well. And so I'm just continuing to think about what I can do, what I can add in. But you can see that a lot of this stays the same. It's not necessarily that everything's consistent and like that I'm only working from the top down, that I'm always adding at the bottom. I'm going back in and revising. Every time I'm working on something, I'm thinking about the entire essay as a whole. I'm not just thinking about adding on to it. I don't write a paragraph and forget about it, right? I go back and change it. And this is where this probably becomes unhealthy. I'm staying up until 3:50 in the morning or something like this. The question here is whether I'm waking up because my son's awake or did I actually stay up all night? That would not be good. It looks like I stayed up pretty much all night. Not a good idea, right? Again, this is in part because this is a strange moment in my life. In general, I don't stay up all night working on things if I can avoid it. Luckily, it looks like I did take a few hours of a break. So maybe I did. Maybe my son woke up at 2:45 in the morning or something, because it looks like there was nothing happening from 11:42 until 2:48. So I think that probably what happened is I was awakened by some screaming and then figured, well, I'm up. And so I worked for a couple hours, it looks like, until, you know, 4 a.m. or something. Again, not the ideal thing. Your roommate would hate you if you did this. But then I took a break, a very long break, somewhere in here you can see this, and it's not until the next day in the evening that I pick these back up again. And this, of course, is getting closer and closer to the paper being due, apparently. And so here you see, again, small changes, observing as opposed to considering. Right, I'm worried about my diction, small changes, still. Not any really big changes at this point, it looks like. And I have another one of these longer nights, again, whether it's because the baby's crying or just because I've been short on time because the baby's been crying is another question. But you can see it here again, I'm worried about footnotes, something that you don't necessarily need to worry about. Fine-tuning things. And the paper's gotten a little longer though, so something must have been added. Yes, here we go. So even though I'd already had some 9 pages, I think, before, and it was getting fairly complete, there must have been some moment that I hadn't talked about yet. But it wasn't at the end of the paper, it was somewhere in the middle. And it looks like I do already have a conclusion too, right? And so, again, the point I'm making here is you don't have to sit down and write a paper from the beginning to the end. You write your introduction, you write your next paragraph, you write your next paragraph, you write your next paragraph. You very well might be in the middle of writing, I don't know, your third body paragraph and think, I've said something in the first body paragraph that I'm not so sure I really like anymore, and it's not fitting with this anymore, so I need to go back and change that, right? And it might just be a word, it might be an entire sentence, but one revision oftentimes will spur on another revision, it seems to me. And as we continue glancing at some of these things here, the paper now has somehow turned into 13 pages, which must mean I've got a works cited page going on, yes. So the last thing I did was put together a works consulted, actually, because I looked at a lot of different translations. And though I didn't cite those translations, I wanted to look impressive, right? Because I had done all this work with the translations, so I wanted to show that I had consulted these translations. And again, these are the sorts of things that you might not necessarily have to do, but putting in your sources obviously is important, and that is something that you'll have to do and think about for LitTrad too. Sources that you don't actually cite, you might want to say that you've consulted. One, to give yourself credit for the work you've done, the reading and the thinking about that article or that book. And two, if some by some chance some thought that's in that article sort of makes its way into your brain and shows up, at least you've done some due diligence to show that you've been influenced by such a person. And then even apparently the morning it's due, I'm still making some final changes. Again, that's maybe not the healthiest thing to do. If you can, by all means, finish it before the day it's due. Of course, we all have these situations arise. Somehow, all of a sudden, I'm at 16 pages, which means I must have done something to get it back to the 12 pages, which is probably, Google Docs is difficult to format sometimes, and so I probably went to a regular computer and put it into Word before I actually finished the talk. But by the end of it, oddly enough, I'm still adding in a big chunk of text, apparently. But most of this, what I'm doing, is very small-scale stuff. The funny thing here is, right, I've changed this opening paragraph every single time I think I've edited this. I've changed some word somewhere, right? On the one hand, you don't necessarily have to be that concerned about the exact word if you only have a couple days to write a two-page paper. But if you want this thing to be as good as it can possibly be, you're probably never going to be entirely satisfied with it. How many of you have ever been completely and utterly satisfied with something you've written? Okay. Me either, right? In fact, I don't know what I changed on September 3rd or why I was doing something on September 3rd. The paper had already been graded and such. This might have been for the colloquium. This paper was presented at the IPS colloquium, and it might have been that after looking back at it, I saw some typo or something that I wanted to fix. I'm not sure. Apparently, I was doing something with a quotation. I don't know why. And then, in fact, I did have to trim this down to be presented later on, so that's even another file. But the point here is, one, I spent a lot of hours, probably much more than is necessary for a 2 to 3 page paper, two to three page LitTrad paper. But what I want to mainly get across is this idea that revision is a constant process, right? And that one thing leads to another thing as far as your changes are concerned, and that you don't have to do linearly. You don't have to do your editing and your revising and your writing linearly, as Ms. Augusta presented as well, when she was talking about how she did her own work in a similar situation. She was writing about the Iliad, and she was talking to us about her developing a thesis statement, how even the thesis changed over time, right? And you very well are allowed to change things. You're allowed to keep working things. Don't think anything's set in stone. I wonder sometimes if just typing things, we think, oh, I've typed it. It looks like it's in a printed book now, so it must be set in stone, and I can't go back and change it. That's definitely not the case. You can always and always revise and spend time making little changes. Little small changes can actually be a big thing. Defining a term, figuring out the right word. It might seem inconsequential, but it might actually affect the way that the LitTrad paper turns out. Making sure that things are consistent. Making sure things are parallel in your construction. Making sure that you have little transitions between sentences and transitions between paragraphs, and that you're happy with the way that it sounds, the way that, you know, imagine what it would sound like out loud, maybe even read the lines out loud. I encourage students to read things out loud, because sometimes things that make sense on paper, when we say them aloud, we realize things don't quite make sense. I don't quite understand what the sentence is. It could be clearer. And at this point, a little earlier than maybe usual, I'm gonna go ahead and open things up to questions. We can actually look at this more if you want. If you want to look at some particular details, or if you just want to ask questions about writing process or how this might work in your own writing, or if you want to talk about what you do, you'll notice I didn't actually have a real outline. And that's in part because I'm really bad about organization as far as rhetorically. That's probably my weakest point is organization. I've never been very good at forming outlines. That's what this spreadsheet was kind of designed for me to do. It was giving me an opportunity to sort of outline my argument before I put it down into an actual essay form. And, you know, I have these handwritten notes, but they're just notes about the text. I don't have a bullet point, I mean, a Roman numeral 1, letter A, you know, Arabic numeral one, letter A, and detailed outline in that way, because I don't think that way. But you might do that. So what sort of questions or comments, thoughts? We still have 15, 20 minutes to talk about writing process, about editing, revising, when it's okay to spend hours working and when you should take a break. What sort of thoughts do you have? Yes.
I just want to know what you think Homer's doing in the Odyssey with dogs.
Oh, well, I can give you my paper if you want. My basic thesis is that he's using dogs to compare, he's comparing other humans to dogs, and he's using dogs to show us what humans are like, and that humans are both unruly and loyal, depending on the human, just like dogs. And but what matters is somehow some sort of training or, you know, development, sort of a virtue, you might say, as many of you are probably in Philoneth right now, reading about Aristotle's Nicomachean Ethics, how virtue is habit, these sorts of things, that we see, say, in Eumaeus, a very loyal character, and it seems that he sort of habituated himself to be loyal. He's compared to dogs a lot because he sleeps with the dogs, with the swine. He's trained his dogs, and his dogs are loyal to him. We also see Telemachus always has two dogs walking with him. So it seems somehow that he's associated with sort of these loyal dogs, like he's loyal to his father. But then the first thing Odysseus says to the suitors when he's about to kill them is, "You dogs!" So they're a different kind of dog, right? They're the vicious, untrained, unruly dogs that just eat everything and are only interested in food and sex. Whereas, you know, you have other figures that are like characters who are likened to dogs, who are loyal and trained and obedient and so on.
So it's like they're the best and the worst of us.
Yes, in some way. So just as dogs can be these really awful things or these really good things, humans can be really awful or really good, depending on how they relate to other humans, how they've been trained, whether they live up to their training or their breeding. You know, the suitors seem to be really good, a really good breed, but they don't live up to their pedigree, so to speak. Right.
I'm wondering if you're reading out the comments on quotes, do you find that when you've been formulating your thoughts, that those comments can be, in a certain sense, not verbatim cut and pasted, but like that they've done a lot of the work of the analysis that goes into the paper?
Yeah, as it turned out for this paper, and whether it's a good idea or whether it just worked with this paper or whether it was just a sort of a product of my own timing and things, not to belabor the point, but again, right, this really was a sort of strange time because I did have this new child in the house. So I did do things differently than I might otherwise. And I did, in many ways, cut and paste things from these comments because these became quite lengthy. Early on, these comments were, you know, one word or something. So let's see. When I first typed some things up, this had just come from what my handwritten notes were. So my handwritten notes just says, Telemachus seems to be accompanied by two dogs, right? And then this same quotation by the end is basically my one of the paragraphs of my essay, right? I'm comparing these to other moments in the text. I've got much more commentary here. And so this was kind of my workspace. This spreadsheet ended up being a way that I was able to elaborate on particular points and think about those particular moments without necessarily having to worry about the big picture, how they all connected. And that's what I did here, right? In the actual paper itself, I was able to see how these things related. And I was able to sort of keep separate moments isolated and then bring them all together in the paper. And so, in many ways, I was able, in this case, to use these comments, not necessarily verbatim, because as soon as you stick it in the essay, you're going to have to transition into it, transition out of it, you know, and so on. But the basic ideas did stay the same.
Yeah, I like to do that with my notes too, because then you're writing down your ideas as they happen, so you don't have to remember, oh, what was that I thought was important about this quote later, and if you type out everything you're thinking, even, like, I don't always make sure that it's proper formal English.
Sure.
But as long as I get all the ideas on there, then it's so much easier when you're writing the papers to plug those things in rather than
Yes. Yeah, I definitely wanted to have a lot of material in front of me before I sat down to the actual writing. I think I mean, I always like to have a good bit of notes, but sometimes I'm more inclined to do something more like, I think Dr. Vayner Cowan talked about this last semester, writing as process and discovery. He seems to suggest that one way you can come up with a thesis, you just sit down and you start sort of almost free writing, so to speak, about your ideas and what's interesting to you, and just whatever thoughts come to you, you put them down, and then you go back and you reorder that and reorganize that into something that looks more like an essay with an argument and a thesis and an outline and some clear organization. And I've done things like that before, too. In part, I was trying, because I knew that there were all these different references to dogs that I wanted to sort of understand, that wasn't going to work. I wasn't going to be able to just walk through the poem sequentially and say, oh, in book one this happens, in book two this happens. Certain theses work that way, but this one didn't seem like it was going to work that way. And so I knew that I was going to need to be able to sort of group things, and that's why I wanted to just have something in a spreadsheet where I could move things around. I think the original reason why I put things in a spreadsheet was so that I could use this column over here on the left with the book and line numbers. I even had to put zeros in front of the single digits so that I could sort them. So I could type them in as I found them, and then I could sort them into books, and then if I wanted to rearrange them other ways, I could, and I could always get them back to be in the order chronologically. That's just something you can't do with handwritten notes, and so I wanted to have that in the computer so I could sort things and cut and paste things easily and move them around. But that's not necessarily what I would do in every paper. I think a different thesis might have called for different kinds of work, but in this case, I found that that using this format and having comments then was able to be added into the essay. And like I said, of course, in the essay itself, you know, pick a random moment, and I'm always changing little words here and there. And no doubt, these little word changes here and there come about because I've put some new paragraph, and that's made me rethink something I said earlier. Actually, in this case, I didn't make a lot of individual changes. There were minor changes, but usually I'm making minor changes as I go along. Here, for instance. Probably here, I changed devotion to loyalty. Probably I put in a paragraph where I was talking about loyalty and realized, well, then the word I used before is probably not the best word to use anymore. And so every little change I made along the way made me rethink something I'd already written. Other questions or comments?
I just want to say that it seems to me that this is a very honest process for writing. It's a process that leaves open the possibility of discovery, actually, right? Because what you're saying is, okay, there's something going on with dogs here, right? Of course, happened. And then you go and you look closely individually at each episode, right? So this is kind of the opposite of where you say, oh, I assume that there's this going on with dogs, and so I'm going to force into my paper this argument I want to make about dogs. You're saying, no, actually, I want to be open to what's happening here, so let me look closely at the text and worry about what I think after I've done some actual digging, some actual research.
Sure.
And so it's a long process, but it's I think a wise process in terms of actually wanting to learn something about the text and being open to say, what does the text say? And then kind of a nice, fun, enjoyable process of actually figuring out how the parts actually go together, right? So you kind of have this jigsaw puzzle, but you don't know what the final connections are going to be. And so bringing those connections together can be A, difficult, right? But also B, enlightening. So I just want to encourage this type of process where you are honest about looking at the text.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I try really hard to do what, you know, some of you, if you're under the Bible, you might have been introduced to the word exegesis. And if so, you might have been introduced to its opposite, eisegesis, right? Exegesis, reading out of the text what's there. Eisegesis, reading into the text what you want to be there, or what you think it should be there based on similar texts, right? It's really easy to pick up Virgil and say, oh, I know what Virgil's going to do because he's just retelling Homer. But Virgil is up to some other things too, right? Much more political in many ways, very interested in Rome, right? One of the things we were talking about today in Littrad was the episode with Nisus and Euryalus, who both mirror Achilles and Patroclus and Odysseus and Diomedes, right? So he's bringing together two different episodes from the Iliad in one episode, right? So is he just mirroring? What's he doing here? It's easy just to say, oh, I know this is Achilles and Patroclus. Well, maybe not. Maybe there's something else going on here too. You could also say, oh, I know this. This is just the Odysseus and Diomedes happening all over again. Well, maybe not. Why is this here? Why is it here now? You know, it'd be really easy to have assumptions and put them into the text. It's obviously better to try to avoid that. I did, as I was going through my reading of the Odyssey in this case, start to assume that there was this sort of general dichotomy, right? Good references to dogs, bad references to dogs. But this actually is what's here is it was a really helpful process where I did the color coding, and this has to do with you know, which characters are referred to as dogs or what the context seems to be. And so I think I had some three or four different shades of gray. I don't know why that's what I did instead of, I guess if I had done green and yellow and purple, it would have been distracting or something. So I just did darker and lighter. And I must have had a key somewhere or something as to how these things were related. But that was really helpful for me to see how these things group together. And then there were outliers in the footnotes on a couple. I said, I don't know what's happening here. There's a reference to a dog, but the one was, I think, the pin that Odysseus wears has a dog on it. And I didn't know what was going on with that dog.
That was my question, really, because I was wondering if you left anything out. I mean, that's why I tend to encourage students use post-its.
Oh, yeah.
You know, use post-its to go and mark, like, mm-hmm. all the passages, if you're doing a thematic, or photocopy a passage and mark it up, you know, work through it, do that pre-work, as Dr. Valenzuela said mm-hmm. in that wonderful talk on pre-writing, different types of pre-writing, where an essay looks like Cinderella for the ball. The image that remains in my mind. But one of the dangers of writing stuff out is that you don't want to let go of it mm-hmm. because you've written it out, you know, and you put that effort in there and by Jove, it's going in there. And sometimes it doesn't fit. Mm-hmm. And I know myself, it's like me killing my firstborn. That stuff. I don't, speaking of birth images. So this is actually a place where you really can use footnotes.
Yes.
If something doesn't belong in your essay, but if it's like, well, there's this weird thing going on with the dog and the pin, you know, put it into a footnote.
Yeah.
It doesn't count for the page count, but it shows that you've been working. You get a bit of credit for it, you know, if your professor doesn't find footnotes and add them to the page count. Mm-hmm. So just. If you do this, if you amass 40 pages in all, if you amass a lot of commentary that you're already writing up, don't be afraid to cut some of that if it's mm-hmm. not in the source of your argument. Because I know when you're from the standpoint of a grading, because Mr. Bowman's also mm-hmm. not just a writer, but a reader. So when he's assessing you, he is looking for a strong main point, a strong
yes.
thesis. He is looking for argument. He doesn't want a list. And
yes.
So that...
This could have become very easily, oh, in book two we see a dog, and in book three we see a dog, and in book four we see a dog. And that's why putting these things in groups and categories was really helpful, because then it became not about, oh, well, there's a dog here, and there's a dog here, and there's a dog here, but in this moment, this happens, and this seems to be what... You know, so I talk about all of Telemachus's moments with dogs all at once, because there are, I think, three different times we see him with these two swift dogs. So I talk about all of those three all at one time. Whereas if I had spread that over the course of the entire essay, you know, at the beginning I talk about it, and then I talk about it again in the middle, I talk about it again at the end, that wouldn't make any sense. So I clump them all together, even though they're across the entire poem. And similarly, you want to group things together if you can. And you can do the same sort of a process. This took a lot of time because I was looking at the entire poem. But if you wanted to look at just one book of the poem, or just one passage, and look at a particular image or a particular theme or character, you could do a similar thing, and it would take much less time and much fewer pages of notes just writing out, you know, this color or this image or this animal, this kind of simile happens, you know, in these 100 lines this many times. And the first time it means this, and the second time it means this, what have you. Other questions or thoughts? Yes?
So how do you take into account the evidence that's sort of an outlier? It's like with the footnotes, yes, I understand. And thinking about the paper, I mean, I can understand how Homer would be using the dogs as a symbol of appetitiveness
mm-hmm.
and that kind of stuff. Is is it too far out of the boundaries of researching a paper to consider evidence that kind of doesn't support your text? What would you
I think you have to consider the evidence that doesn't support your argument, right? Because what the danger is, you find one instance, in this case, you find one instance where it looks like dogs are being used to show that men are loyal. And so you say, oh, well, Homer uses dogs to say that men are loyal. Well, then you would be overlooking the very large amount of evidence that shows that dogs are also showing that men are not loyal in the suitors, for instance. Right. So then you realize, well, you either have to say there are certain men that Homer uses dogs to say are loyal, or you have to make your paper bigger and say Homer uses some references to say men are loyal, and others just say that they're not, right? And you have to distinguish what kinds of men are people. In fact, this is women and men in the Odyssey. Which ones fit into which categories? If that's too long, then you're going to have to just focus on one, right? And so that's one of the issues you're going to run into in a Litrad paper. It's actually really short. 2 to 3 pages is not a lot. So you're either going to have to pick a very small scope, you know, a few hundred, 100 lines, or basically a page of text, maybe one book and a particular image that shows up a couple times in that book, or you're going to have to only do sort of one part of an issue, you know, one way in which an image shows up, and suggest early on, okay, this image shows up a few different ways, I'm going to talk about this one, and then explain why you're talking about that. Because you do want to make it clear, that's what you would call like a counter-argument, right? A counter-argument would weaken your argument potentially unless you can account for it. So you need to say, you know, what might happen, you find this one interesting moment, whether it's about dogs or whatever, that makes this particular point, and you find that actually most other places it's something different. Well, then all you have to say is, there's this one moment that's really interesting, it's very different from all the other moments, and then you talk about that one moment. Right, and so it's a different argument than saying, you know, always this is the case. You want to be very wary of saying always. You know, Homer always does this. Virgil always does this. That's dangerous. Right? It's very unlikely that you're going to find something that's always the case. Right? Much more likely that you're going to find something that's usually the case, often the case, sometimes the case. And it's, again, very likely that you might find a moment that's different from other moments, and you might want to highlight that one. But so you definitely have to be aware of what looks different than what you're thinking or what you're expecting. Other questions? Yes?
I'm just going to throw one more thing out there. I noticed in your drafts, after you'd gotten things down and after you were writing it, you were also adding chunks of paragraph that were not necessarily there for the sake of yourself and what you were discovering, but you're there because your reader needed something. And I was wondering, could you just say a little bit more about the things that you add when you're presenting it to a reader, as opposed to the things you notice when you're coming up with your idea?
Sure. So maybe one example of that would be, like I mentioned, that I made comments about the Iliad, I made comments about the Republic, I made comments about what C.S. Lewis does, just because these things were coming to mind as I was reading the text. Similar ideas about dogs, about them being loyal, or about, you know, so Plato's line, or Socrates says in the Republic, right, that dogs bark at people they don't know and are, you know, like people they do know, right? And so that seems sort of similar to something that's happening here. And what that gives you is an opportunity to bring in somebody who might not, you know, who might know Plato's Republic really well, or might like the Republic, but might not be as familiar with Homer, and so they're going to see something. It gives you, I think, a different image. Or maybe in bringing in the Greek words, even though it's something that I'm not particularly familiar with, people who, you know Greek are going to appreciate seeing the Greek words. And then, of course, you have the introductory paragraphs and things like that, and transitional sort of paragraphs that are... my second paragraph is largely just explaining how this argument's going to work, right? And so on one hand, this is good for me to figure out that I do know exactly what I'm trying to say, but it's also an opportunity for the reader to have some sense of where I'm going. And so, for instance, at the end of the second paragraph, I say, in what follows, I'm gonna look at these things, and then I'm gonna see these basic ideas. And I don't exactly lay out my entire argument. For instance, I say, we see one particularly meaningful way in which humans and dogs are not alike. I don't tell you what that is yet, because I want you to keep reading, but I do give you a sense in which of where this is going. I want you to have some sense of what's going to happen, but I don't want to say everything that's going to happen. And so this is sort of inviting you to keep reading, I guess. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yes, I especially like the idea that often your reader needs some background information that's obvious to you, but if you're going to set up something about the gods, whether you want to set it up from Plato or set it up for, you always want to be writing for a reader. Mm-hmm. You never want to be writing where you're, at least for these papers, for a diary of your own process of reading, right? It's good to do that. You get ideas from it. You know, do whatever way you brainstorm, whether it's making a spreadsheet or writing a diary or doing interpretive dance, whatever works for you as far as coming up with your ideas. But when you're presenting it to a reader, remember, the reader needs the problem. It's obvious to you, your problem is that you have an assignment to write for a lit track, but your reader doesn't care. Make that problem there. Make a problem for your reader to care about. Tell them up front. You didn't know what you were doing when you were writing. Tell them up front what you're going to do. And then if you need background information, do a little bit of summary, not a lot of summary, but maybe a couple lines when you're just setting up. Oh, by the way, there was this dog. This is left, 20 years ago. So, it's so rich and valuable, but you do have to add that after you've done your research and come up with your point and even your argument. It's part of your argument.
Yeah, if you take an approach like this, you are going to be in danger of ending up with a laundry list, right? So you do have to make sure that it becomes artful and becomes interesting and try to link these things together in a way that you move from one paragraph to another in an interesting fashion rather than just sort of laying out evidence. If you're just sort of listing things, the reader's not going to appreciate that. And so if you do end up taking notes in this sort of a fashion, make sure that you don't end up with basically bullet points. And if you have any other questions you want to ask me in person before you go, that's fine as well. But thank you for your time.